You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome, cultists. I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey. It's a dark and stormy night. Yeah, it's August, but bear with me. It's a dark and stormy night, your car has a flat, and your only hope to get help lies in that castle back there with the sign that says enter at your own risk. Yes, this time we're metaphorically going balls deep into arguably the biggest cult movie of all time. I mean, could we even call ourselves a cult show if we didn't take a look at the legend that is the Rocky Horror Picture Show? See? Get you waiting there. Admit it, you were shivering in a tizzy. Patient. I'm DK, the Charles Gray's substitute for this episode. But as usual, dear listener, I won't be alone. I'm joined by three guests who are all eager to see what's on the slab in this one. And yes, we are all dressed appropriately, though for my co-host Mike, described on numerous occasions as a man of little morals and some persuasion, the fishnets are pretty much standard these days, isn't that right, fella?
I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a podcaster.
Yes, how are you doing? I dare say you've been looking forward to this one, yeah?
Oh, yes, definitely, yes.
Nice. Now, because you're a fan, while I jump in every so often like a good criminologist, I trust you're going to be dropping some knowledge of behind-the-scenes shenanigans as we go through, yeah?
Oh, yes, I'll jump in with the odd, oh, Rocky.
Terrific. And next up, ladies and gentlemen, ironically, we have our first couple on Cult Classics. You've heard them before in individual episodes. But this is the first time they've joined us together in this dive. I just got to be careful to keep Frankenfurter Wilson away from them. So please join us in welcoming Michael Whaley and Rune Vaughan.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
How are you guys doing?
Quite well.
Pretty good.
Nice one. What have you both been up to since we last spoke?
Oh. What, a year?
Yeah.
Less for me, but yeah.
It has. Y'all like Mike better. That's fine. no, busy. Graduated a college course I was doing and doing lots of shows and stuff like that. So it's been a really busy, exciting year.
Nice one. And have you got any updates, Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say I shot a short film, Demon, that we talked about, I think, on the... They were getting ready to start crowdfunding on, I think, when I talked to you guys last time. Yeah. And we're in post-production on that. Rune's actually going to be the editor, so with them being so busy right now, we're waiting on just a little bit of time for them to be able to start really digging into it. But, nice. And then still writing the zombie western musical feature that we're going to try to do in a year or two. And... that's about it. Supporting cool. Rune, all the shows and everything else like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, baby.
Now, normally on the show, we ask, the first-time guest their favorite cult movie, but seeing as you've both already done that, and Mike and I are prevented from making a wager on this one. as a couple, I've got to ask, is there anything that you guys particularly like to watch together? You know, you've had a hard day, you get home, what's the one thing you throw on the TV to unwind?
We love, like, Galaxy Quest. I love Star Trek films. Love this film. Like, we could watch this one anytime, honestly.
Listen to the soundtrack when we're on road trips.
Yes, all the time.
So there's a bit of a sing-along in the car, then?
Oh, of course.
It really is.
Of course.
Yeah. This was, like, one of the first... I think this was the first album that we listened together in the car, like, our first time out together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, so you've got very fond memories of this, then.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Well, yeah, we'll take just a jump to the left and get right down on this one. And as usual, if any out there in the real world haven't seen this one, although if that's the case, what are you even doing with your life? Then you'll probably be very confused. So go watch it and then come back. But for the rest of you, the Rocky Horror Picture Show is a 1975 independent musical comedy horror film produced by Lou Adler and Michael White, directed by Jim Sharman and distributed by 20th Century Fox. The screenplay was written by Sharman and Richard O'Brien, who plays Riff Raff in the movie, and it was based on O'Brien's stage production of the Rocky Horror Show. It's a tribute of sorts to the science fiction and horror B-movies of the 1930s through to the early 60s, starring Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Boswick and Charles Grey, with cast members from the original theatre productions including Nell Campbell and Patricia Quinn. The film was shot in the UK at Bray Studios and on location at Oakley Court, frequent shooting location of many Hammer horror productions. It opened in the United Kingdom at the Rialto Theatre in London on the 14th of August 1975 and in the US on the 26th of September at the UA Westwood in Los Angeles. And although doing well at that location, elsewhere was a different story. The film was withdrawn from its 8 opening cities due to very small audiences, and its planned New York City opening on Halloween night was cancelled. Initial reception was also extremely negative. Critic Roger Ebert noted that when first released, the Rocky Horror Picture Show was ignored by pretty much everyone. He considered it more a long-running social phenomenon than a movie, and he rated it 2.5 out of 4 stars, describing Curry as the best thing in the movie, maybe because he seems to be having the most fun. However, despite the negativity, it soon became a hit as a midnight movie when audiences began participating with the film at the Waverly Theatre in New York City in 76. Audience members returned to the cinemas frequently and talked back to the screen and began dressing as the characters, spawning similar groups across the US. Still in limited release in 2024, some 48 years after its premiere, it is the longest running theatrical release in film history. In many cities, live amateur shadow casts act out the film as it's been shown and heavily draw upon a tradition of audience participation. The film is most often shown close to Halloween. Today, it's got a large international cult following and has been considered by many as one of the greatest musical films of all time. And in 2005, it was selected for preservation in the US National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. And as always with our cult classics, the movie under discussion can currently be found on various streaming platforms, as always dependent on your location, as well as in physical format. Now, this is a strange one for me. My first experience of this phenomenon was not the movie or the stage play at all, but rather an 8-bit home computer video game of the stage play. Yes, this
Only
is
you.
A thing that exists. yeah, I know. It was on the ZX Spectrum, of all things. My friends had a Spectrum, and they managed to get a copy of the Rocky Horror Show adaptation, and it was really good fun. If I recall correctly, you kind of had to get pieces of the... Medusa machine in order to de-Medusa your partner and escape. You could choose between playing Brad or Janet, and you had to avoid Riff Raff, Rocky, Eddie, etc. But if you ran into Furta, Magenta or Columbia, things got really bad, or good, depending on your point of view, as they removed all your clothes and you had to find them before progressing. And when naked, the player is unable to climb ladders, which is essential to completing the game, as they're using their hands to cover their genitals. I would always play as Janet for reasons. Yeah, this game kind of awoke something in me, even with the limited pixels on the Spectrum, which I guess was putting the cat before the horse, as when I finally did see the movie, and I think that was late one evening on Channel 4, I was really looking forward to it, and it didn't really match up to what my imagination had conjured up in the meantime, so there wasn't that connection. Okay. So, yeah, cursed by my own strange psychosexual issues, I guess. So anyway, what about you guys? And yeah, I'll ask you first on this one, Wilson. What was your first experience of this?
I think we've talked about this off air, and it's a weird situation because initially I kind of had a hatred for it, but only because of things that have nothing to do with the actual stage production in the movie. It was because a girl that I kind of sort of got with and was with for a long time, a serious girlfriend of mine, had starred in a stage production of it with her ex-boyfriend. So I was kind of already like, ooh, I hate this because you guys are working together and doing stuff. And then, it was something they shared and she insisted on that, you know, I'll give it a go and watch it one night. And I was predisposed to hate it because it was something they shared. So I came away from that initial experience and was like, this is terrible. But I wasn't being fair at all to it. And obviously when me and said woman broke up and I went back to the film with a fresh mind, willing to actually appraise its actual merits rather than what grudge I had against it, I was like, you know what, this actually is really good. And since then I've had so many different other experiences with live participation events or Rocky Horror themed nights, or we grew up basically, it's a weird peculiar British thing, but we grew up doing the time warp every time there was like a school disco or something special going on,
every wedding reception.
So we kind of I bonded with a lot of people over knowing the moves to the time warp, including the alternate version where all the girls in our local town used to go, put your hands on your tits, oops. Which was a variation I wasn't familiar with until seeing it one day and was like, nah, right? Yeah, sure, make the film even more sexually deviant, why don't you? lots of sort of personal experiences with it and stuff, and like I said, I think that, and then just watching it I watched it for university just because I was kind of studying more and more cult musicals and things, and you know me, I got heavily into musicals, and I love the soundtrack for this. I don't think there's necessarily a dud song on it as well, so as was it Michael was saying earlier, like the soundtrack is just fantastic. You can just listen to it start to finish, and it's a credit right the way through, so
yes.
Nice one. What about you, Rune? When did you first come to this one?
So my first viewing of it was like 20 years ago. I was pregnant with my first kid. I was visiting a friend and we were crocheting blankets. She put this on because she was a huge fan of it. And so I was only like halfway paying attention to it. I don't even recall the ending of it. So when I finally went back and watched it in a theater at a midnight showing with like the shadow cast and everything, the ending was a total surprise to me. But I was hooked from that point on. I was absolutely hooked and I got involved with the shadow cast. So I did the shadow cast for several years, I think. And it has been a staple in my love of film since then, for sure.
Brilliant. Whaley?
I very oddly, when I was about 14, my mom was like, hey, this is an awesome cult classic movie. You need to watch it. And showed it to me. And I don't know if it was a combination of my mom's love for it, which is very, influential to children. But I just absolutely loved it. And it's just been something that's been in my life since. And I didn't see a shadow cast until like 10 years ago. But I had heard about them and I knew about them. It was just one of those movies that I had seen that I just really, really loved, but I wasn't sharing with anybody or anything else like that. It wasn't until I started, being more in the acting community and with friends and stuff like that. And was like, oh, you guys have seen this movie too, kind of thing. It was just not on my radar for that. But I mean, that was, 15, 20 years ago. So that started. And then I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, good. Other people love this movie. This is an amazing movie. And also, I had, I think, just seen Clue for the first time right before I watched it. So I was a huge Tim Curry fan already. And then I was, and my mom, that's how, one of the reasons my mom sold it to me. She was like, hey, the guy, the butler from Clue is the lead in this. And I was like, oh, cool, awesome. Yeah, let me see that. And I think that's how she got me to watch it the first time, was because of my love for Tim Curry. And yeah, and just have loved it ever since.
Would you say it's one you guys rewatch with regularity?
Not regular. We listen to the music a lot, but we don't rewatch a lot of movies. But if we were to sit down and rewatch, like, we'll put this one on maybe once a year or so.
I used to watch it more when I was single because it was the movie that I would put on that I would clean the house to. Because I would be able to hear it and sing, but I didn't need to look at it because I'd seen it so many times. So it was, but one of this, but that was also when I was single, I would clean the house, you know, and not
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You'd be dressed like the Queen video for I Want to Break.
Yeah, I have this impression now of Whaley with a feather duster singing along to Sweet Transvestite, shaking his hips.
I'm going to try this later, I think.
You'll have to bear with me because I was a complete, more or less, novice with this. How different is it to how different is it to the stage play?
Stage play.
All right.
I can tell you. I can tell you about a song that was in the stage play that was cut out of the movie. If you like.
Yes.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, there's a song called "Once in a While," which is a melancholy ballad sung by Brad after Janet discovers him in bed with Frankenfurter. Yeah, in the original stage musical, and for the movie, the scene was filmed, but apparently excised from the final cut.
Mm-hmm. It's on the soundtrack, so we see it.
It is, yeah.
I believe it's in the deleted scenes as well, yeah.
Yeah, it's in the deleted scenes, and it's on the sound. When I bought the soundtrack, I got the expanded soundtrack that had every song that was recorded for the movie. So.
Oh, wow. I'm just wondering, when it comes to the writing, was the thing about Nixon quitting, was that in the original, or has that been kind of shunted over to the stage play? Do you have any idea about that, Mike?
I genuinely can't remember. Cause it's been
You're too busy gnashing your teeth at your ex.
I mean, yeah. Or at her ex, at least, yeah.
I mean, that brings us to the writing. And what I do love about this, it really just does not... It wastes no time getting into it. So I just wondered what you guys, you know, your general impression on the writing of this one is. And I'll come to you first, Whaley.
I think the writing's great. I think it does exactly what it's intended to do, being campy and stuff like that. I think the songwriting is wonderful. Like, Richard O'Brien has just done an amazing job crafting beautiful songs that also, you know, push the story like they're supposed to in a musical. And I just think they're fantastic. So I'd say the writing's an A+ for me.
Great.
Not enough reference to the Crystal Dome for me, but otherwise fairly.
Stop the fans, please.
Yeah. See, they lured in Whaley by saying Tim Curry was in it with me. They were like, so the presenter of the Crystal Maze.
I do like, I know it's, you know, like a homage, but I do love the little Easter eggs, such as the King Kong homage towards the end with Frankenfurter and Rocky. Yeah, I love the little touches.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons I love the song Science Fiction Double Feature.
Yeah.
They are all actually, like, genuine films and stuff, and when I was doing my education of like, oh, let's go and watch all of these classic sci-fi and horror movies. Yeah, they're all great as well. Well, mostly all great. Yeah, there's one or two pretty iffy ones, but you know.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I just loved the little touches in this, like, you know, Chekhov's motorcyclist and stuff like that. But yeah, Ruin, what about you with the writing? Is there anything particularly stand out with regards to that?
I do love the writing, and the music is, it's definitely one of my favorite albums to listen to. And I don't know, I love everything that's so quirky about it. And that, I think that's like a British humor thing for sure. And my mom doesn't understand that kind of humor at all. So she's just like, it's way over her head when it comes to things like that. But I just think it is so brilliantly funny. And yeah, I would watch this one every day if I had to.
Brilliant. Mike?
Yeah, before I get into that, are you okay if I drop you some knowledge about the audience participation stuff?
You drop whatever you want, dude.
Part of the reason I like it is that it's designed for that. It's kind of, it's an experience in a lot of ways rather than like a script. And, you know, it's designed for you to interact with it. And it, there's not a wasted moment. There's not like long swaths of dialogue or dramatic scenes. It's like one line song. But yeah, before I get into the actual writing of it. I've got some information about, like, when they were first doing sort of participation things, they would hand out what they called RHPS kits, which included a biscuit or bread for the toast, which you would throw when they did the toast. People used to insist it be buttered, but now most theaters apparently frown on that because of the mess. So you'd have some rice to throw at the wedding at the very start, a whistle for when they get lost, a candle or a lighter for the song There's a Light.
Not anymore.
Yeah, those are now banned, particularly because you've got newspapers as well. So there were probably a couple of incidents there, I assume. Newspapers to cover over yourself with the when Janet does to cover from the rain. And you've got a sheet of paper with instructions for the time warp, which I was able to find a picture of. So hopefully I'll insert in the edit because I've got a picture of the initial like 6-step instruction for the time warp thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, you have to apparently throw toilet paper when they all start screaming "Great Scott," preferably Scott brand.
Oh God!
Yeah, but again, patrons used to start dressing up and would bring, as I said, rice to be thrown at the wedding, water pistols for the back row to squirt during the rain scene, newspapers for the front and middle rows to shield themselves from that rain. They now bring flashlights for the There's a Light verse instead of a candle or a lighter, rubber gloves to snap just when Frank does during and after the creation speech. Noisemakers that the Transylvanians use when they're applauding Frank's creation, those weird, you see them in football games and stuff, those weird rattly things. Toilet paper, Scott Brand, as I said, confetti to be thrown at the Charles Atlas reprise as well as the wedding toast, a party hat when Frank puts on his hat to wish Rocky happy birthday, a bell when we made it, did you hear a bell ring, and cards for when Frank says cards for sorrow, cards for pain during that song. And as Rune said, most movie theaters now ban open flames, so you're not going to be bringing cigarette lighters or anything.
And rice.
Yeah. But yeah, in terms of what you're supposed to say back to the screen, there's a massive swath of things that there you can go and look up an entire of like the entirety of the film, which I won't get into. But some of the most sort of common ones to do just occasionally rather than every line of the film are whenever Brad appears or is introduced in some way, the line asshole is appropriate. When Janet is introduced or appears, the line slut is appropriate. If this is before she's actually a slut, the response she's not a slut yet, give her a chance is appropriate. To be answered by we gave her a chance last week and she blew it. Whenever the narrator appears, the following lines and variants are appropriate. He's got no fucking neck. A chicken stepped on this man's forehead. Your mother should have fucked a giraffe. Wipe that ass off your chin. Lovely.
This sounds like one of our usual recordings.
And finally for this part, Dr. Scott may be booed or you can yell, kiss ass. So, yeah, in terms of that kind of participation and answering back to the screen, in an NPR interview, Tim Curry recalled David and Angie Bowie actually attending a screening at the height of the film's popularity. He said, I remember when Bowie came and he brought this huge entourage and she was with him. And when Richard O'Brien was about to kill me, she shouted, no, no, don't do it. So I guess she was one of the first people to do that.
Oh,
so, yeah. Oh my God.
You may know this, but many movies have Easter eggs, little hidden things waiting to be noticed by sharp-eyed fans. But Rocky Horror has actual coloured eggs hidden around the set. Mm-hmm. The crew had apparently staged a literal Easter egg hunt, and some of them proved so well hidden that they ended up in the movie, including one that you can see beneath Frankenfurter's throne. So there you go. You can look up literal Easter eggs.
Jeez.
And just a little bit of a, you know, it wouldn't be me if I didn't point out that you can't get this film on 4K, so I don't have anything to report on how good that is. But I did buy the Blu-ray version specifically for this because it's one of those where I'd had like an old battered DVD for years and didn't realize on the Blu-ray version you get a choice straight away before you do anything to go to US or UK version of the film. When I looked up the difference, apparently the only difference is that the US version omits the song Superheroes at the end. Quite know why you'd need a whole different version for that, but fair enough. There is also an option which was something that was really cool but kind of more of a gimmick, where you could watch the opening of the film as an alternate thing in black and white, where it stays black and white until they get to the Frankenstein place basically and then goes into color a la Wizard of Oz, which is a cool idea, but you know, I don't know if I would actually do it anytime I rewatch the film.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So yeah, what about the writing for you, dude? What is it about it that does it for you with regards to this one?
It's just, I mean, you've touched on a lot of the stuff already. It's the cheeky humor, which I think is so peculiarly British, as you said. So it's just silly things like the car when they're married, rather than saying just married, is just like, just wait for tonight, she got hers, now he's gonna get his or something. It's like, you know, there's no reason for that to be there, a set decoration. It's just a little bit cheeky. Or even daft things like the idea that at the wedding, sort of Frank and Riff Raff appear doing the American Gothic painting. So they can kind of point at it and be like, what?
I noticed that. I was kind of chuffed at that. I like that little touch.
It's awesome. But even like the way that the first songs are, like the way that they'll just deadpan jump in with like Janet, Albright, or whatever.
And
it's been well timed, but like I said, it's just, it's hard to put your finger on what it is, but yeah, just a sort of cheek. A bit of subversion, which I think is the key word that you'll come up with a lot when it comes to this film. And just, yeah, it's just a celebration of being a bit weird, a bit different, and being kind of okay with that, I guess.
I've got to ask you guys, you've all been to the Shadowcasts, yeah?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to it, not in one. But...
All right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to I don't know if any of you've seen it, the Alan Parker movie Fame, where they go and see a shadow cast of this. Is it right that the first timers, they're referred to as virgins, and they kind of get them up and humiliate them?
Yes, and they put red lipstick on your forehead with a V.
You see, I kind of want to go to a shadow cast, but at the same time, I would brick it.
For what it's worth, they don't do that so much now because they've got. I remember definitely going to one where that wasn't the case. It was a lot more accepting. But I do know that is definitely something that used to happen.
We still have a shadow cast that does the first Friday of every month at one of the theaters here. Like some of the people that are in the shadow cast, they did the shadow cast of The Princess Bride at Atomicon, where I have the film festival. So we're closely good friends with them, and they still, when I went there like 5 years ago, they were still doing it, the virgin thing with it. They did say any of the virgins had to be over 18 because some people were bringing 16 and 17 year olds, and so like they were like, you can't be, we can't mess with you if you and draw on you if you're not over 18 and consenting to it, basically.
Yeah,
but they were still doing it a few years ago.
See, I need to attend one of them and just pretend I'm 15.
See, the one I attended was very inclusive because they were even like, don't worry about it if you know you don't want to dress up or whatever, just come in, you know, come in a suit and tie and be the criminologist, or come as Riff Raff, or don't feel like you've got to go the full hog and be like fishnets and a basque straight away.
Absolutely.
DK, come visit, you can crash here and we'll take you, you got to come on one of those and we'll take you up and introduce you and take you to your first shadow cast.
Yeah, you guys are just going to humiliate the shit out of me, aren't you?
No! we will have air conditioning, though.
Yeah, there's AC here.
Sold!
Exactly.
Yeah. We have room here, and you come stay with us, we'll take you to a shadow cast.
Oh, I'll take you up on that at some point, guys. Mike's there saying, you know, humiliate him. I mean, take it up to 11.
Tell you what, I've been meaning to film the shadow cast for them, so I'll make sure that that's the one I'm actually filming as well.
So. For Mike, oh, great. So, yeah, I mean, this'll, you know, going with the filming, it takes us on to the direction. I do like the direction on this. It's almost kind of like guerrilla filmmaking style. It looks, for want of a better word, to me, it looks cheap, but I think that's kind of part of its charm.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's basically, I say something very similar to that in my conclusion.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've got some notes here. I love Frankenfurter's entrance. Mm-hmm. I think that's just top notch. I don't really remember that from last time, but this time it kind of like blew me away. I love that the handshake sequence. I loved little touches like when the machine's lowering onto Rocky, and you've got Tim Curry looking up as it's lowering, stuff like that. Although, you know, I was a bit worried that Brad and Janet, they don't seem too bothered about getting out of the rain. Mm-hmm. They're you know, so
no, they're probably just foreigners with ways that are different to our own.
Yeah. So I wonder what you guys think with regards to the direction. I'll come to you first on this one, Mike.
Yeah, I love it for some of the reasons that you said. Like I said, it's not quite gonzo filmmaking, but it's beautifully flashy in a way that I think is very appropriate for this movie. It wouldn't necessarily be for anything else because, like I said, the director in most cases isn't supposed to make their presence known, but this is one of those movies where you get away with being just ridiculously over the top because everything is. So little things like, you know, question mark star wipes to the criminologist and things that are just like little touches you wouldn't notice, but it just adds to the overall atmosphere. Or things like just the staging and the timing of the way everybody joins in with the performances or does the callbacks. As you said, the appearance of Frankenfurter behind them in the like lift thing is really cool. The fact that Tim Curry does the sort of cardinal sin that you're never supposed to do and just stares straight down the lens.
Yeah.
At one point, at least at one point, you know, they get water on.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
On the camera and stuff, Meatloaf kicks one of the cameras during this thing. And yeah, I mean, the bedroom silhouette scene where it just like, it appears like it's either Brad or Janet and they repeat the same dialogue and then, you know, they remove a wig and suddenly it becomes Tim Curry because, yeah, he's got the same silhouette as Susan right. Sarandon with a wig on.
So close.
It's just brilliant. It's just, yeah, it just does not care. And I love that about it. Or another little thing that I just didn't notice for a while is like when they all get turned into statues with the Medusa thing, they're all like, the women are like fully naked, like, yeah, you know, over the top, full nudity. I was like, you get away with this? Like, I feel like I've seen Susan Sarandon naked now. Yeah? And as you said, the kind of the Archeo references, the King Kong reference, the many Frankenstein references. Like, I was always confused why, like, out of nowhere, Rocky's just sleeping and then Riff Raff just starts poking at him. And I'm like, oh, I get it. It's Frankenstein, you know, basically is the point, you know?
Yeah.
When he's like, the villagers are coming for me. So I appreciate all that. And just, again, little sort of things. The fact that there's a sort of life ring in the pool at the end from the SS Titanic.
Yeah.
I love it. I love all of that. And just the quick cuts and shots, the way everything's done. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those, it's not necessarily the direction, but it's just, it's so quotable and so, yeah, snappy and on the ball. And many a time now that I'm sort of a fan of the film, I've been in conversation and done stuff like, Rocky, Brad, Janet, Dr. Scott, Rocky. Yeah. Yeah, just ridiculous stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, it's hard. You can't say the word damn it without
Janet.
I cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not say it. It's a compulsion. I have to say it if someone says it. Even if it's in my head or very, very under my breath because I'm not in an appropriate situation for it. I'll still 100% I have to say it.
So what do you think to are there any standout moments for you as it comes to the direction on this one, Whaley?
Michael named pretty much he went through the gamut of most of them, and all of I was agreeing with all of them. And but yeah, I thought the direction was good. I looked up Jim Sharman's stuff to see if there was anything else I'd actually seen before. He's only directed like 6 things, so I was trying to see if I knew anything else that he had done, but I did not. No, overall, I thought the direction was good, and I liked a lot of the choices that were made in that regard.
All right, fair enough. What about you, Rune? Any things that no one's mentioned with regards to the direction?
I really love Frankenfurter's entrance. Like, the first time you see him, the way that's all staged and that opening song for him is just, that's my favorite moment of the whole show, I think.
I have to say that kind of really registered with me this time I watched it. Tim Curry in this is just phenomenal.
He's stunning, isn't he?
Definitely.
I adore him in all things, but yeah, he's absolutely stunning. He owned that role in a way I don't think anybody else would have been able to.
Definitely not. Like, where he's on the vaulting horse.
Right?
I just love it. He genuinely does look like he's just having the time of his life.
He does. He just doesn't care. He's just there to have the best time.
Yeah.
I would say that there's no slackers in the performance. It's just that Tim Curry is so good that he ends up overshadowing them all anyway. But I think everybody does really well, especially when you look at, like, everybody has to sing and do real performing. And I was impressed with Susan Sarandon because you don't really think of her as a singer.
Yeah.
She's actually really good. She's never really done musicals or anything since. And I'm like, I wonder why, because she can carry a tune, you know?
Yeah.
And
most actors can, and because they train for it just in case.
Yeah, I guess. Well, as you say that, Barry Bostwick doesn't really, you know, quite live up to
Barry Bostwick's.
Dude, have you never seen Megaforce?
Yeah, I did have an anecdote about in terms of like the performances and stuff, by the way.
Go for it.
The role of Eddie obviously wasn't originally played by Meatloaf in the stage show.
Yeah.
And apparently Richard O'Brien handed him the lyrics to Hot Patootie, the song, and was like, don't worry about getting it right. Nobody on the stage show has ever gotten it right first time. You know, it'll be fine. We'll cut around it. We can work it out. We'll edit it together. It'll be all right. Don't fret. And apparently Meatloaf literally came in and nailed it first take.
Front to back.
Charles Gray, I think he's always a class act, from his Hammer stuff to the Bond stuff. So yes. Again, it was something else, another thing that I could like kind of latch on to, because I think without Meatloaf, without Charles Gray, if I'd have, even, you know, discounting the ZX Spectrum game, when I watched this for the first time, if I didn't have those touchstones, I don't know what I would have made of this. I mean, it was difficult in the first place, but yeah,
I think that was the same with me. It was just overwhelming the first time because it is so different and it's not stuff you're used to seeing, because there's a lot of risks taken when you look at this as what, 76?
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
You're putting stuff on screen that you just like, you don't see now. You know what I mean?
Could you imagine this coming out now in a certain subsection of society?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It probably wouldn't
exactly.
Make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there'd be protests.
Oh, God, yeah. Heads would be exploding, pearls being clutched.
But I mean, there's something about this production, because even the times that they've tried to redo it, like I watched the bloody Glee remake and the one that they did for one of the American stations, was it Lauren Cox?
Yeah, the live version that they did a few live plays, and that was just one of them.
Pale imitations, all of them, to be fair. Just not quite as good.
Because you just can't replace, you can't replicate Tim Curry.
Oh, that God, no. No. I love the accent he does for Frankenfurter. You must be awfully proud.
Yeah.
You know the story behind it, right?
No, go for it.
If I recall correctly, was it his own mother's accent or something like that he was like copying?
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Or it was some weird combination of like, yeah. I can't even remember now. My bad.
I did hear that it was based on his mother because she kind of was one of those people that put on posh like airs and graces, and
yeah,
you know, she would be Cockney or whatever 1 minute and then would answer the phone and be like, hello, this is the
cutter. The character Frankenfurter was based off of Richard O'Brien's mother.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah.
I love though that you can immediately get into his voice from the second he appears, because when he starts singing and what was it, the line, he's a little put dine.
Yeah.
Like, yep, that's the, when you, as soon as you've got dine, that's how you go the rest of the
word. Handyman.
Yeah, he belts that song. That is
so good.
But I do have to say I love that face where he calls Brad and Janet groovy and then pulls that little
yes. He's like, so
yeah.
When I sing it, I make that face. Yeah, 100%. I can't. It's another thing. I have to do it because that's part of it.
And yeah, Little Nell. I love Little Nell in this.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She's the heart of the film in a lot of ways. The fact that she's like the tragic figure.
Yeah.
Like, the only one that gets the real tragedy of, like, you know, you use us and you toss us away, and you know she had this thing with Eddie and then with Frank, yeah. And yeah. And yet she's got the most kind of carnival-esque voice and kind of performance to it as well.
I love that switch. I love that like tonal shift. And I mm-hmm. think that's done really well. And I never picked up on that before this time watching mm-hmm. it. I don't know why. But yeah. But yeah. I mean, what about you guys? Is anybody that, you know, other than Curry, obviously, is anybody that stands out?
I think that Patricia Quinn doesn't get enough credit because, like mm-hmm. I said, she fully understood the assignment, and again, it's from the moment she first appears, mm-hmm. when out of nowhere, it's just like, oh, we're very lucky. You're lucky, he's lucky, I'm lucky, everybody's lucky.
Oh, lucky.
Like, she's fully doing the, like, horror sort of I'm out of it bit, and even, like, her bits in the time warp when she's kind of chiming in with, you know, it's with a bit of a time slip, you're into the times.
Yeah.
All of this, it's just kind of, yeah, fully understood that, and then her and Richard O'Brien going from these horror archetypes, you know, him the same doing the, like, yes, the master will be pleased, and then busting in at the very end as, like, these sci-fi transvestites with ray guns, and like, ah, enough, Frankenfurter. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, yes, this is incredible.
And that still wasn't as outrageous as her costume in Dragonfire. Okay, what about you, Rune? Any performances that stand out for you that we've not mentioned?
Yeah, I agree. Patricia Quinn is one of my favorite characters. Like, her and Frankenfurter are my two favorite, and her relationship with Richard O'Brien, with that pairing, the way they play off of each other, is so well done, I think.
Yeah. Whaley?
I actually always, for some reason, and I don't know if it was because of his attitude or whatever, but I've always loved Riff Raff. I've always loved Richard O'Brien's. It, honestly, first two times watching the movie, did not know that was one of the creators of the thing. I just, oh, that's Riff Raff. You know, and it's just, but yeah, I've always...
I was blown away when I realized it was him that sings Science Fiction Double Feature as well. His singing voice.
I think my mom told me, they're like, oh, that's the same man doing that. But
it's Patricia Quinn's lips, but it's Richard O'Brien doing the actual singing.
Right.
And There's a Light is still one of my, his part of it is one of my favorite things to try to mimic when I sing it. production design, I thought was, I still, it's so campy and fun that, like, everything, I mean, having the stuff in the opening with before Time Warp starts, with Magenta and Riff Raff going all through that opening little lobby. What do they call that again? Is in the... Oh, damn. I thought there was a certain name for that they mentioned in the movie.
Do they?
Or am I thinking of the thing with Dr. Scott later and it was a different room?
Oh, that was the Zen room.
Zen room. Okay. Zen room. Yeah, but no, like, it's got the coffin claw. Like, yeah, oh, the grandfather clock thing. It's so silly and ridiculous, but at the same time, it fit. Like, it was like, oh, yeah, okay, I understand what place we're at right now. This is weird.
I did. In terms of, like, the slapdash production design, I did read as well that the only reason that Dr. Scott comes bursting through the wall is because they forgot to build another door.
Right. so weird.
I love that.
I did also read that a lot of the what you were just alluding to, Whaley, with the clock and stuff, a lot of the little bits of junk scattered around there were taken from the Hammer movies.
Oh.
So, yeah. What about you, Mike? Anything on the production design for you?
Not really. I mean, I remember being very taken aback the first time I saw it by the incredibly red room, which is, it's a very striking production design, and I don't think I'd ever seen anything quite like it at the point when I first saw this. I mean, it's obviously deliberate. I don't, you know, they would have dressed it that way. I doubt they would have just found a room that was completely red. But yeah, that scene still kind of jars with me. I don't know if it's just because, I don't know, it's so unnatural, which I guess it's supposed to be. It's a lab kind of thing, but yeah, that was the only kind of production design where I still just can't quite get away with it. It's just very weird to me.
I think that if they were terrible enough to remake this film, that doing anything fancier than what they did the first time would be a disservice. Like,
yeah,
it is all part of the charm of the film itself, and it would be awful to see it upgraded in any way whatsoever.
Oh god, yeah, it would be way too glossy, way too
like, you need it to be that little bit of grungy, a little, yeah,
like I said, it's a tribute to those films that were like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The old sci-fi and horror, which, you know, it was done with a shoestring budget.
Exactly. You get what you get.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the ramshackle kind of aspect of it. And that goes down to the way they bring up the 20th Century Fox jingle at the start.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so great.
Yeah. I guess that kind of brings us to the sound design and the soundtrack for this one. And honestly, I'm not overly familiar with it. It's weird, but growing up in the UK, you sort of take a lot of these songs on by osmosis. I mean, like Mike was saying earlier, you know, Time Warp, it gets played at pretty much every reception, every Christmas party. It's just there constantly. And it amazes me that even though I'm not familiar with most of the songs on this, I do recognize them because they've just been an integral part of kind of growing up in the UK.
I think they're so catchy and so well written that, like, after three watches of the film, I know every word, and like Michael, I just sing along all the time because they're incredible. They're really well written. Yeah,
for sure.
Do any of you guys have a favorite musical number?
How can you pick? I was trying, and I was like,
all amazing, but Time Warp is like, you can't not dance to Time Warp.
No,
obviously, but they're all so wonderful.
I have a special place in my heart for two songs. Sweet Transvestite, I just can't not, like, it's just such an amazing song. I love singing it and just that, but also Don't Dream It Be It, at the end in the stage show. Those are my two favorite songs from this soundtrack. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love every single one of them. It's just like when you have five kids. You love all of them equally, but there's a couple that are your favorites, and that's the kind of thing that I am with this soundtrack.
Oh, I don't think it's a bad song, but I think Science Fiction Double Feature is my favorite song, but Sweet Transvestite is my favorite overall performance. And then, as you said, it would be Time Warp if it wasn't for the fact that we grew up doing that so often that it's just like, at this point, I'm sure I don't even need to remember the moves. It's just sense memory. You know, those first opening bars kick in and I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, it has instructions in the song. You don't need to learn it.
Yeah. That was another thing I should have said for the direction that I forgot, actually, was that we take it for granted, but the use of the narrator just interspersed with the events of what happens. And never better than during the Time Warp when it just cuts to him explaining, like, it's just a jump to the left. To the left.
Yeah, pulls the chart down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go. It used to be Time Warp, but watching it this time, for days after, I could just not get Sweet Transvestite out of my head.
Great song.
So,
How do I save Methmai?
So, the legacy for this one, 8-bit home computer adaptations aside, it is still a cultural phenomenon in both the US and UK. It attracts fans of differing backgrounds all over the world. Rocky Horror conventions are held in varying locations, which apparently last for days. It plays a large part in the LGBT community, who identified with the embrace of sexual liberation and androgyny, and attended show after show. And Judith A. Perrano compares Brad and Janet's initiation into Frankenfurter's world to the self-discovery of queer identity. I just wondered what you guys' thoughts were on that.
Well, yes, it is definitely an integral part in the LGBTQ community. I know our shadow cast here in the past has always been in participation in Pride Month and everything. And yes, I love how Frankenfurter is absolutely free and unashamed in every aspect, and even in like the kink community kind of way, like, you know, like he's like, there are no boundaries for him in a positive way. And I think more representation in that is always a good thing.
Yeah. Whaley?
I think it's great. As a straight man, though, I really don't know that I have a place to talk about it, other than I think it's great representation and good for all involved.
Yeah. It's also influenced a lot of things, obviously. It's been featured in a number of other films, TV series over the years. You know, you're talking episodes of The Simpsons, Venture Brothers, Boondocks, Glee, Drew Carey Show, 70s Show, Deutschland 86, and American Dad. To date, there have been 3 attempts by O'Brien to pen a sequel to this. 1979's Rocky Horror Shows His Heels, 1991's Revenge of the Old Queen, and Rocky Horror: The Second Coming, all of which faltered on the way into production. Instead, O'Brien produced Shock Treatment, which was a, you know, a quasi sequel featuring some of the characters from the original. With I think it was song lyrics we were from Rocky Horror Shows His Heels, and it was based on the 1981 movie for the theatrical stage, and it premiered at King's Head Theatre in Islington in spring 2015, and. You referred to this earlier, Mike. The remake, Rocky Horror Picture Show, Let's Do the Time Warp Again, premiered on Fox in 20th October 2016, but apparently came nowhere close to this one. Is that right?
It was pants.
Oh, fair enough. So, yeah, normally at this point we go around and ask our guests if they feel the movie under discussion is worthy of the cult classic label, but that kind of feels redundant for this one. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much the definition.
We say yes.
Yeah.
Formed the label.
Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to this one, what is it for you that particularly resonates? What is it about that has you all in? And it could be anything from a technical aspect to a more primal emotional one. I'll come to you first, Rune.
Great, me first. What's the question?
Just what is it that does it about, you know, what is it about this movie that just does it for you?
That does it for me. Tim Curry and the music, honestly. Like, yeah. The music gets me every time. I could, yeah.
Nice one. Whaley?
It's the music. And Tim Curry. Yeah, I'd say that those are the two things that just speak to me the most. So, yeah I agree with Ren.
Cool. Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I go over a lot of it in my conclusion, so I don't want to step too much on that. But, I mean, for me, everything comes together. It's one of those kind of perfect storms where the acting is pitch perfect, the casting of everybody, the quotability of it, the fact that it's just so fun, doesn't take itself too seriously. It's wild. It's such a good time. And the key to it, as I said, is just, I think, subversion and the fact that you can... It celebrates difference, which at a time... in the 70s and heck now, where that's not particularly, you know, we're all expected to conform lest we be branded woke or whatever. It's a big deal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to have to say Tim Curry on this one. He just looks to be having such a blast. I mean, you look up scenery chewing in a dictionary, there's no doubt in my mind that it should be accompanied by a picture of curry.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but honestly, it's nothing without being backed up by tremendous talent, and he delivers that in spades, and I don't think vocally he can be matched. The reality matches the hyperbole as far as he's concerned, so yeah, I just think he literally blows me away on this one. So yeah, now it's time to see what you out there think of this one, and I think I know how this one's going to go, but we'll ask our resident feedback expert to deliver the goods, and I understand you've also got some personal observations on this one, is that right?
Thanks, DK. I've actually never seen Rocky Horror Picture Show. When I was a kid, my friend had a sister that loved playing the soundtrack over and over and over and over again to drive me crazy. But my only exposure to it has been through pop culture references, like on the Drew Carey Show when they were going crazy trying to get to the midnight premiere of it, or midnight show of it. And then with Glee when they did their own version of it. So let's go ahead and see what people have been saying about it all around the world. But I can see that it has made such a great community and so many people absolutely love it. Susan, DLin7 on Twitter says, "Been to a couple of theater performances and seen some great costumes, but the best one was going to Page's Bar, used to be a sci-fi bar in London, for Admiral Bob's, the manager, birthday party. Walking through London in costume was interesting. Always been a fun film. Mary Uzoni, 2024. I performed the show and only watched it after being cast. It's campy fun. I've always wanted to go to a screening because our crowds were so raucous. Oh, 3.5 stars because while it's super fun, it's also not the best movie ever. Nikita Jobling. Seen the film multiple times. Finally saw the stage show beginning of this year. It was amazing and I'll 100% be going again. Sarah Peach Winter. I first remember seeing this movie far too young, at about age 6, and I always remembered the scene of Rocky climbing the scenery at the end with Frank on his back. Seen it countless times in the theater, I always dress up too. It's just so much fun, and the crowd participation is wonderful to see. I saw an anniversary special at the cinema and even got dressed up for that. If you're a fan of this, it gets a hold of you. It's in your soul, and you surrender yourself to it, to absolute pleasure. Tim Curry, man, just steals every scene, and he literally chews not just the scenery, but the whole shot and the words being said and sung. All-time fave movie and show. Perry Brooker. I love Tim Curry, but I've also really enjoyed watching the bits you can find on YouTube of Anthony Head in the role. Amazing. Out of 5 stars, I'd say it's a 6. 3 Met by Moonlight. 5 out of 5, incredible score, and Tim Curry is powerhouse. The midnight screenings were a refuge for all of us freakos back in the 90s. King Gok Eshi. I absolutely love this movie, and there was a time I used to dress up for the midnight showings. David Howland. Ooh, I quiver with anticipation. Regrettably, never done the stage show, but one of the freakiest was taking the bus full of audience members in Hole in Hole, Frankenfurter getups, magentas, and various other characters all singing every song. Must have seen a flick a million times. J.A. Productions, Rubio. My history with Rocky Horror Picture Show wasn't great, to be honest. I'd only seen it once before, and I really did not like it. It was too weird and horny for me to get into, so I didn't seek it out again for a long time. But recently, I decided to give it another shot, because I felt like I could be more fair to it now that I'm more mature. I'm glad that I did, as nowadays I would happily call this a really great time, even if I'm not as head over heels in love with it as some other people. Oh well, a few more rewatches with a drunk crowd will probably make it better for me. But yeah, chances are you know why this film is great. It's one of the most off-the-wall and crazy films ever made, and it makes it an absolute blast to watch. It's more camp than anything else I have ever seen. And that gives the film so much charm and memorability. What also helps with the film's memorability is Tim Curry as Dr. Frankenfurter, which is truly one of the most iconic performances put to screen. Tim Curry is just an absolute treasure. This movie is also immensely elevated by the songs, which are all bangers. And finally, I really respect this film for how ahead of its time it was and how much it has helped me with gender identity and sexuality over the years. I'm so glad it exists just for that. So yeah, great movie. Danny McConway. I absolutely love it. I've been to the stage show many times, and I've been to cinema shows quite a few times. 15 out of 10 stars, all dressed up as Frank. Don't dream it, be it. Will Templer, 03. X loved it, so I hate it. But realistically, 4 out of 5. John Dirley Lennon, the only musical I like. Andreas Rivas. I'll jump to the left, then step to the right. Jeff Tilley, one of my top favorites. Had absolutely pleasure of meeting Nell Campbell recently, too.
Yeah, cheers for that. Certainly a general consensus there, but I don't think I expected much else on this, to tell the truth. And as always, if you missed out giving your reactions and want to make your voice heard, we're always listening on our socials. And if being sociable isn't your thing, and believe me, I know, then just give us a little rant in the comments section for this. Go on, you know you want to, your little tease. So yeah, with that in mind, it's time to get to the final thoughts of everyone here on the studio. So, does anyone mind if I go first? Because I really want this to end on a high note. And I feel like I'm letting the side down. But right. So
insert Debbie Downer from SNL.
Yeah. Here we go. I'll preface this by saying I like it, but I don't love it. And before you all come for me with, you know, torches and pitchforks, I fully admit it's very much a me problem. Well, that and the aforementioned game. The individual elements are great, and there's no faulting many of the performances in this. The songs are instantly recognisable, and it's right in my wheelhouse. But for the limited number of times I've seen it, I just cannot connect with it. I don't know if it's the way I came to it or the age. I have no personal connection, and I hate it. Because I want to love it, I really do. I've never seen the stage show, I've never been to a shadow cast, and it's not something, despite the prevalence of some of the songs in my life, that speak to me personally. The only thing I can compare it with, to me, is maybe the Ken Russell adaptation of Tommy. Both are recognised as seminal musical works, and I can recognise why they're so lauded, but I just can't get my head around either one, personally. And believe me, no one hates myself for this more than I do right now, but until I have more Rocky Horror in my life, I'm gonna settle for the upcoming score. Although I will say, it's very odd, but since watching it this time, it's stuck with me for weeks, and I've been thinking about it, and now it's had time to worm its way into my brain, it's gone up a shade. Okay. So I'm gonna give it 3.5. So you know, boo and hiss now before I hand it over to someone else.
Not a bad score, to be fair. All
right.
That's not a bad score for someone who doesn't love it like the rest of us.
I can appreciate why people love it. It's just missing that connection. So as soon as I'm able, I'm taking you guys up on that invitation.
Yeah, you need a proper introduction to it. I do think that this is a show that you need to see with people that love it and can like get you, like guide you through all the fun bits of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, watching it alone at home really isn't quite the fun
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not, but I would say, one of the things I would preface, and we tried this with another friend and it did not work, is don't take someone to a shadow cast who doesn't even know what the movie is. We've personally tried that with a friend of ours. We just kind of like, oh, you should come, and a bunch of us were doing, they're like, okay. And they, like, we didn't really give them any kind of warning of even what it is, and you've got to have at least a little bit of knowledge as to like at least give someone a little bit of a 5-minute history on something before you take them to a live shadow cast. Also, like, they heard up, they were like virgins or like that, and somebody was like, oh, you should do that, and they were like, I'm not going up there, do not touch me,
right?
And you know, sort of Ooh. thing. So just make sure that they're aware of what's going to be happening and the type of movie it is and stuff before you take someone to a shadow cast.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, as soon as you're speaking, Will, I'll come to you. What are your final thoughts and conclusion out of this one?
It's just, it's so damn good. Just everything about this movie is just fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's just a good time, and it's got beautiful music that is super catchy. It's slowly earworming DK as we speak. And by the time DK comes to Charleston to see it, it's like, all right, I love this movie, and we'll go back posthumously and change the rating. I don't know. There's just so many things about it that the sum of its parts equal amazing. And it's going to be something I watch until the day I die.
Nice. And what would you give it out of 5?
I'd give it 5.
Oh. Nice one. Rune?
This is easily a 5. I don't even have to think about it. If somebody was going to tell me that I had to pick 5 movies and that was all the movies the world could ever have, Rocky Horror would be the first one, I would say.
Ooh. Fair enough. Is that everything that you have, or
me?
Yeah. You want to elaborate, or is just no? It's just that good, and that's it.
It's so good. It really, really is. It is the perfect combination of like the unique British humor and the campiness, and just the absolute fun, like no holds back. On this one, and I think everybody should have to watch it at least once in the proper setting.
Yeah. Cool. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, apologies for the slightly long-winded conclusion, which I haven't said for a while, but yeah.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, surprise. Kills it. The very definition of a cult movie, if ever there was one, this film reeks of being something that won't be for everyone, that not everyone will get, but that will resonate so much with those that do. Me? It's a cheekily funny horror, sci-fi, catchy musical with a peculiar Britishness starring some absolute cultural icons, the guy from the Crystal Maze, a random Meatloaf performance, and narrated by Blofeld. This film could have been made for me. But more than that, I think too many of us can relate to the experience of feeling outside of the societal norm, a square peg in a round hole. I definitely see how this is appealing as a celebration of subversion, nonconformity, and difference. It's also a film that lives far beyond its 2 hours, spawning great times and memories from midnight screenings to many a time warp and more. As I was looking for criticisms, I was going to critique the obvious low budget and really basic sets, but honestly, they just add to the appeal. I'm a fan of Flash Gordon and classic Doctor Who. What more can I say? It took me a while, but I absolutely love this. There isn't a wasted moment without a song or performance. The direction is wonderfully flashy. The performances are perfectly pitched, and I just get it. It's not easy having a good time. Even smiling makes my face ache, but I can't help but smile and laugh at this, and it's just fun. And I also give it 5 out of 5.
Ooh, nice. Okay, so...
All right, DK, we got to work on you now.
Yeah. So that brings it to a rough cult classic score of 4.62 out of 5, which, I think it's pretty good, my own subjectivity aside. So, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this is a classic in every sense of the word. And, you know, after such negativity on release, it again goes to show how something initially ignored can grow to be such a stalwart that it outlasts those critically acclaimed pieces from the same era. I mean, generations have cut their teeth on this one. And, you know, they're going to continue to do so, don't you guys think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the film lives way beyond its weekend box office, for sure.
So, yeah, that's it for us this time around. As always, thank you out there in the real world for joining us on this one. We hope you've enjoyed it. If so, please like, subscribe, and spread the word. And maybe contribute to our coffee if you're so inclined. We've got some good stuff coming up, not only on Cult Classics, but on our other channel also. Speaking of which, Mike, thank you for helping me out on this one, fella. You had a good time?
You're very welcome. Yes, I've had a fantastic time.
Really? Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Oh, yes. I've been corrupted thoroughly by your sort of evil ways, shall we say.
Oh, thank you.
Bear an outro, can you tell?
I'm
just really winging it.
I'm getting that vibe. Care to share anything with our listeners? What we've got coming up on Cinema Classics and Silver Screen Regular Flavour?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff. There'll always be stuff coming on Cult and Classics and Silver Screen Regular, including, I think, upcoming, we've got reviews of Alien, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, various other things. Over on the Trek channel, we're back to monthly episodes, and the next one I think will be a review of the top 10 episodes of Star Trek Discovery, if you are inclined to Trekkie ways. And yeah, just keep an eye on all our social media, because we're very busy and there'll always be something coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, so busy we constantly complain about it on Messenger every night. So see, listen, there's even more reason to stick around. As I said at the start, come with us on this strange journey, because we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. So yeah, Rune, Whaley, thank you guys for joining us on this one. I mean, I still feel guilty for letting the score down, but I'm glad you were here to champion it.
Absolutely, we love it.
Of course, thanks for having us.
No worries. You successfully made it through as Cult Classics' first couple, so I appreciate you both taking time out. You've had a good time, I hope.
Always.
Of course.
Brilliant.
For sure.
Awesome. Where can the listeners find you, should they wish? Any socials you want to put out there? You want to give the link to any of your current or upcoming projects you'd like them to check out?
Yeah, you can find me on TikTok or Instagram at Rune Vaughn, at Rune Vaughn. I do have a website, which is just like runevaughn@wixsite.com. And yeah, if you happen to be stateside in Charleston, I am in a couple of shows coming up, so you can check those out through my link tree on my bios.
Good. Whaley?
I've got for TikTok and Instagram, I'm always Michael Whaley. And I don't have any shows coming up, but I do want to shout out one thing, and then maybe we can throw a link to them in there, the Shadowcast that we're very good friends with here in Charleston is the Charleston Absent Friends. I know they have some socials on Facebook and Instagram. But if you're ever in Charleston and want to see an amazing Rocky Shadowcast, and that's where we're going to get DK to come to, then they are definitely people we're checking out. They're very fun, and they're a nonprofit, so any help that they can be given to keep doing what they're doing is a great, great thing.
Brilliant. Yeah, you heard it here, folks, so go check those out. As always, we will put the links in the description, same as for our own socials. We'll be back same time, same place, first Tuesday of every month, and next month our open mic season continues. See what I did there, fella? As Mr. Wilson joins us once more, as well as featuring the return of Adrienne from this year's 1941 review, and please check that if you haven't, as just in time for the long-awaited sequel, we'll be taking a look at Tim Burton's 88 classic Beetlejuice.
Oh.
So, I take it you like that one.
Oh, yes.
We're just as big Beetlejuice fans in this house as we are Rocky Horror.
So. Yeah. All right. God, your house rocks. So, until next month, don't worry. The heat is much more bearable without clothes. So, you've got our recommendation to feel as free as you possibly want. We'll see you. Yes, we'll see you next time. And remember, as Mike just said, don't dream it, be it.
You have been listening to the Cult Classics Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast, created, written, and hosted by DK, produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Feedback section produced by Lady VN. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Silver Screen Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.